SV Carranza, case number 251839. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May I reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes, indeed.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Rory Bellantoni, and I represent the plaintiff appellant in this matter. The first issue I'd like to address is Cruz. Cruz, the case that Your Honor certified to the New York State Court of Appeals that dealt with class size, where there are more than one class size that's applicable under New York State regulation, is the CSE free to choose one or the other? Yes, we know that. But what the Court of Appeals said at the beginning of their decision, the State Court of Appeals, we hold that the regulation sets forth a list of mutually exclusive alternatives and that a student's committee on special education, CSE, must therefore select the listed alternative that best meets a student's individual needs. There are two cases so far in the district court that have addressed this head on, and I know that the district court cases aren't binding on you, but Judge Lyman decided Talley, and his approach was more of the CSE can select one over the other. In Amberster,
was that before or after Cruz?
This is after. He found that the CSE was free to choose between two options in selecting the best classroom environment for the student. But Judge Clark and Amberster went a little further. She recognized that the CSE must still choose the alternative that best meets or serves a student's needs. And in that case, she found that the SRO's decision was inadequately reasoned as to why the 12-1-4 best serve the student's needs. So I understand that this argument, if needs are highly intensive, there's no more automatic 6-student classroom, right? I had that case before, Your Honor.
Before Cruz, I would have thought that it was inconsistent, but we did have to certify, and New York gave us an answer. Now, what is it that you're saying here was not then considered in terms of a particular child?
Here, the SRO found that the recommendation, the 12-1-4 class, and this is before Cruz, so I can't fault the SRO, but found it was appropriate. In Cruz, the state review officer did more. The state review officer there found that the 12-1-4 best met the student's needs, even before that was the standard, because the 12 adults created the most supportive environment.
But isn't that essentially what the SRO found here?
No, I disagree. The SRO here found that it was appropriate, but neither the SRO nor the district court looked at the reasoning to ensure it was the best program or best met the student's needs. We know that the student had been in a 6-1-1 class previously, had made progress in that class. The DOE recommended the 12-1-4, and the SRO's decision reads more like it's not an inappropriate class. She said it was appropriate, but didn't do this analysis. And I would suggest, because these cases are going to come up time and again, that the district court, that the case be vacated and remanded with instructions for the district court to find, to make a specific finding, that placement best met the student's needs or that was demonstrated on the record. If not, the judge can remand to the SRO or can find that there was no FAPE.
Read me again the exact language of a New York court.
The opinion opens, we have accepted the certified question, and then we hold that the regulation sets forth a list of mutually exclusive alternatives and that a student's committee on special education, CSE in parentheses, must therefore select the listed alternative that best meets a student's individual needs. We answer the certified question accordingly. So in Ambrister, the way Judge Clark approached this was to look at the record and to determine if the SRO made that finding, whether there was evidence to support that finding. And in that case, she said no. Judge Lyman in Talley, he just said that the CSC was free to choose between one or the other and didn't do that analysis. It basically comes down to an IDEA analysis rather than a state regulation, because the under the IDEA, the IEP has to be uniquely tailored to the student's needs to help the student make progress during the year. It would be the alternative that best meets the student's needs.
How much do we look in cases like this to whether the SRO has used particular language or whether they have looked at it and said, this fits?
I think there should, at the very least, be some evidence in the record and an analysis that discusses which best meets, not which is appropriate, not whether one can or should. I mean, the Court of Appeals rejected that the CSE is free to choose one or the other without more. I far be it from me to tell Your Honor what the standard would be, but we did address this in Cruz. When Your Honor issued the certified question, I believe somewhere in the opinion, you found or at least held that you weren't making a determination as to which one was better in that case, the 12 or the 6, only that the regulation had certain language and you were looking for guidance from the state. When that was remanded, although you didn't mention the SRO in that decision, underlying that case was an SRO decision that found that the 12 to 1 to 4 class was the most supportive. Maybe not, may have not used the words best meets, but that was the analysis. He found more students, more adults in the classroom, created more support for the students, and that was better for the student in that case than the smaller classroom. Here, the SRO did not do that. She just looked at the IEP and said, under the circumstances, the 12 to 1 to 4 is appropriate, but didn't engage in the kind of analysis. It may have been Bates, SRO Bates in Cruz, that SRO Bates did. The other issue I'd just like to address is the 30 versus 60 minutes issue. Again, here, the state review officer, I'm not sure based on what, found that at the end of the day, a 30-minute class and a 60-minute class is the same when you account for breaks and transition between classes. There was no testimony supporting that the 30-minute class best met this student's needs. Just the opposite. There was a parent witness that testified when the student is in a 60-minute class, because it's hard to get the student to focus, the student settles in at about 30 minutes to 40 minutes, and the best part of the student's class is the last 20 minutes.
I'm sorry, where is that in the record? You said that the record evidence suggests that the breaks and transition time did not consume 30 minutes, but I wasn't really sure what you were referring to.
Oh, the SRO, I apologize, I don't have a page cite, reasoned that there was no fundamental difference between a 60 and 30 minute class, because with a 60 minute class, there are breaks during the class that maybe ends up being 45 minutes of education, then transition time. So she didn't rely on testimony that said these classes were fundamentally the same.
You said that the record evidence suggests that the breaks and transition time did not consume 30 minutes. What were you relying on in making that assertion?
It was in the SRO decision. What she's...
By the way, in all of these cases, you do not give us a full appendix. And I must say that has been a real problem for us in these cases. A real problem. And that violates the rules. So it's sort of to a side. And I wasn't sure in which of the three cases that you'll be arguing yesterday, today, and tomorrow but please give us a full appendix.
May I ask, because I just don't know, when the appendix or the record is sealed in the court below, I'd have to make a separate motion here. I can't just
correct
put it on the docket. I have to make a motion to correct have it sealed
but
here.
We see that all the time.
So, okay.
It is a violation of our rules, and you should understand that, and that should not happen again.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Let me ask you just one housekeeping sort of question. So you argue that the child here should have been classified as having traumatic brain injury rather than multiple disabilities. Is that right?
We did. I think that was more relevant prior to Cruz.
Okay.
And the reason was the diagnosis should not come into the treatment. But what got us into that last category in Cruz was a student who's designated with multiple disabilities, and
you agree that both can.
But now it doesn't. With the Court of Appeals decision, it really does not matter any longer, because multiple disabilities, even if it's not technically a correct diagnosis, the CSE can still choose.
After Cruz, there can be a choice where there are both sets of possibilities.
Together.
That we all agree on. So the only question is, what is the standard that the SRO must look to in deciding that this is appropriate? And is some language in Cruz that you cite in its decision that either one may be possible what guides the standard which we look to for what the SRO does, or is it our standard view of how much the SRO has looked at it?
I think it would be the same analysis with respect to any other service or related service that you're trying to figure out whether this best meets the student's needs or is in the student's best interest. And I don't think it is the same from student to student. But I think there should at least be some analysis consistent with the opinion to make a determination whether this best meets the student's individual needs, rather than just saying you're free to choose one over the other.
Okay.
You
reserve 2 minutes, so we'll hear from your friend on the other side.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Saint Marie?
Saint Marie.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Hannah St. Marie on behalf of the appellees. This court should affirm the district court's decision upholding the SRO's determination. And given that counsel only focused on certain arguments, I will focus on those as well, unless the panel has questions for me on the other arguments. To start, regarding Cruz, this is a brand new argument that counsel is bringing forward at argument. He filed no response to our 28J letter about Cruz or filed an additional 28J letter about these district court cases, which he's mentioning for the first time.
Did he raise this point, this distinction with Cruz below?
No, Your Honor. At the point that this was being briefed below, Cruz had not yet been decided, Your Honor, but he did not raise it.
Yeah. So the question is, what do we do given the fact that Cruz came in after? Could he have raised it to the district court at that point, that the language of Cruz now required something?
Off the top of my head, Your Honor, I'm not entirely sure about whether the district court would have jurisdiction to address such a motion while the appeal was pending at the same
time.
The
appeal was already pending?
Yes, Your Honor. But I will say, even if this court were to look to that language in Cruz, and I apologize that I do not have it in front of me, as the requiring the SRO to determine the best program for a student, the SRO's decision in this matter absolutely meets that standard. I will point the court to page 60 of the appendix. And where the SRO specifically concluded that the 12-1 plus 4 special class setting had the very type of providers that this student requires and are not found in the definition of a 6-1 plus 1 class. The SRO goes on to say that review of the hearing record provides a rationale to support the 12-1 plus 4 special class.
What page is that again?
Page 60 of the appendix, okay. Your Honor. Thanks. As precisely the type of programming that will address this student's unique needs.
So you say that the SRO, in fact, did find not just that this was adequate, but that this was the right one?
Yes, Your Honor. I'll turn to the question of the timing of related services. I'll note first, the council provided absolutely no citations to the record in their briefs to talk about the support for the proposition that SC would only be able to make educational progress with 60-minute sessions rather than 30-minute sessions. And if you look at the SRO's decision, it discusses his particular needs, his abilities, his physical health, the fact that he fatigues easily, and using that makes the determination that 30-minute sessions would allow him to make progress towards his educational goals, which is the relevant standard here. And I'll further note that the dispute over the length and timing of services is exactly the type of issue where deference to the SRO's institutional competence in educational policy is warranted. And a citation for that is RE 694F3rd at 189.
I have a question for you about the timing of the SRO decision, which was so far after the school years in question, including a consolidation in 2019 of the 2018-19 order and the 2019-20 due process complaints, the IHO consolidated them. And then not until October of 2020 did the SRO issue a decision. And I know that the Mackey equitable authority kind of argument was not made in the district court, but I'm just troubled and wonder whether we would be free nonetheless to take that into account and act on that from a kind of taking a Mackey approach.
Yes, Your Honor. So first of all, I'll note that the record shows that the delays before the IHO were consented to repeatedly by both parties. Mm-hmm. And that can be found on the district court docket number 20-6 at 955 through 960. Mm-hmm. And it reflects both parties consenting to those delays. And as the SRO noted in her opinion, there's no further information about why the case was waited until it was consolidated with the second case. So unfortunately, I don't have the answer for you regarding that, but I can say that at least part of the delay was consented to by both parties.
So, and what's the reason, though? I mean, had it been raised, this is an extraordinarily long period of time. You can imagine parents consenting to delays to be accommodating to the agency. There are a lot of cases. They're complicated. They're very fact intensive. And, this is a recurring problem in these situations. Would there be a reason for us not to apply the SRO decision retroactively?
A couple of reasons, Your Honor. And I would say, first of all, this is a different matter because at the same time that the SRO rendered her decision, so the iBrain was held to be an appropriate placement for the 2018-2019 year at the same time that DOE was found to have offered a FAPE for the 2019-2020 year. Uh-huh. And the only reason that the SRO found that DOE had not offered a FAPE for the 2018-2019 year is because DOE did not appeal that part of the IHO's finding. So the SRO did not make a reasoned determination as to that. Uh-huh. And so essentially, if this court were to apply Mackey, it would be allowing plaintiff to essentially, after having lost on the merits under Burlington Carter for 2019-2020, backdoor through pendency belatedly. Uh-huh. I'll also note that Mackey does, pardon me, Your Honor, Mackey does hold that the district court does have equitable authority to apply the pendency determination retroactively, But here, the plaintiff did not ask the district court to exercise that authority. It's unpreserved. And on top of that, the question now is whether the district court erred in sua sponte not exercising that authority when it wasn't asked to do so. And I think that's another consideration that would lead against doing that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Unless your honors have any further questions for me, we would ask this court to affirm.
Thank you.
On that last issue, there are only so many extensions that can be given even with consent. But to answer your honor's question a little more, in 2018, the due process complaint was filed in July. The IDEA proceedings are supposed to be, per the statute, concluded within 145 days of filing the DPC. That's through the SRO decision, which would be November or December of 2018. The parent here prevailed on the 2018-19 school year. There was a denial of FAPE. The school, private school, was appropriate, and she reversed the IHO and found equity-favored funding. If that case had been decided timely, when the parent filed the due process complaint in July of 2019, pendency would have been at the new private school, not the old one under the defective, Ventura di Polino was the substantial similarity that was rejected. That was the original theory of pendency. But here, had there been a timely decision, and the SRO decision here was October 2020. That's almost 2 years beyond what it should.
But you did make this argument in the district court.
No, and that's why I didn't bring it up when we started, because I knew it wasn't raised. However, can the court address it? Pendency is supposed to be, at least that part of pendency, automatic as a matter of law. This should have happened. So even though we didn't necessarily raise it, we raised it in a reply, and I know that's not sufficient, but the court can still look to what happened. I will say these types of delays happened a lot more before the city formed Oath. Now things move a little faster. A lot of this was also, you had IHOs who were attorneys in private practice who were trying to juggle private practice and these calendars. So this was an exceedingly long extension. If I can just address the 30 minutes in the appendix at page 61. With respect to progress, the school psychologist testified that students, S and generally, could make progress with 30-minute related service sessions, that the district considered 30-minute sessions for students in the lower grades, as well as looking at their goals, and that 30 minutes was appropriate for, and here it's the student, to make progress. That was general testimony, not necessarily specific to this student. And that's all I wanted to add on that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
Decision.